Hello, everyone. I'm Lisa Burwell, your host of VSpeaks Conversations with Heart and Soul. This new platform that we started a couple of years ago is a sister to our magazine, V Magazine, that we are now entering our 15th year publishing. I love this platform because it's so much more enriching, and the connectivity that you can have with speaking with someone in person is far above what the printed pages can offer, but both are great together. And my guest today is Mallory Irvin, who is a two-time author, three-time contestant in the Amazing Race, Miss Kentucky, competing in the Miss America pageant, and now operating and founding a global lifestyle brand, Living Fully, with the podcast that bears the same name. And there are so much more. I am so excited about this interview. Mallory, thank you so much for taking the time. And I have no idea how you have time to do anything that you're doing.
I feel the same about you. You have quite the pedigree as well. And I have to say, like, just starting, your voice is so calming. I noticed that about you when I met you in person last year at the event.
Yes.
You just have such a calm spirit, and it's just so rich.
Thank you.
You have a really wonderful vibe about you.
Awesome. Well, I feel the same about you. I'm going to start out with something that is the beginning in the book, your book, Living Fully, which is so inspiring. And that is when you were 10 years old, you sang the national anthem at an NBA basketball tournament. I can't even imagine what that was like. But as you explain in the book, when the spotlight comes on you and it's quiet, unlike any other quiet, except when you're at the top of a mountain, as you say in your book, you were fearless and did an amazing job with that. And then 5 years later, when you were 15, you did that again, but you weren't as fearless, because as we get older and then we become more self-conscious and all of that. To think that that's what you were doing then, and then, I mean, if you can believe it, it's an unbelievable story, your story, and then you're valedictorian of your high school, right? Superstar all the way. And you're a competitor and you like winning, and who doesn't? But a lot of people who are competitors don't win all the time, but you seem to have won all the time. And I'm in awe of that. And I know these are God-given talents, you know, but then you also have to work really hard. Our talents that are God-given still need to be nurtured and grown and matured, and we have to do what we're supposed to do with it, you know? So it's not that you don't have to put the time and the effort into all of this, because you do. But take us, because there's so much to talk about, but take us to, you weren't happy losing Miss America, but you were a runner-up, and that must have been deflating, but I would say not really, because you were still in the Miss America pageant. And then somebody from Survivor comes up to you, a scouting agent, and they want you to be on Survivor, and you have the wherewithal to say no, because that's not in your wheelhouse right there. You don't want to do that. And then shortly thereafter, I'll let you tell the story about how the American race came a-calling.
Yeah. So, well, you said a really good point, and one that a lot of people don't pull out of my story, in that as a young person, I just kept winning. I felt like I was just on the top. Everything was really good. I got really nervous to tell my story, that in sharing that 5 or so years of that low, that it would negate this really bright and vibrant childhood that I'd had, that was really, in a lot of light, something that I would call perfect. As a parent myself, I just look at my childhood and it was really wonderful. But when you win and win and win, and then when you have your first loss, and right after that loss, you get an opportunity that's even greater than if you'd won.
Correct.
I mean, it couldn't get any better for me,
right,
for a long period in my life. And for a long time, I thought that's what Living Fully was. I thought, this is just it, you know, all of this success and all these accolades and finding joy from that and being such a superstar in this tiny hometown that I was from in Western Kentucky, very rural community that I grew up in. And that, Lisa, was the beginning of what really brought me to the platform that I have now, because that was the beginning of this kind of, this crumbling portion of my life. The Amazing Race, like you just said, after I did Miss America, I was runner-up in Miss America in 2010. And then I walked off that stage and literally was handed an opportunity that I could only have dreamed of. So I'm in my early 20s and it's just like, bam, 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 like awesome, awesome, awesome. So also, you know, like I was really I was a pillar in my community, even at a young age. Like I was just, people knew who I was in my hometown and they supported me and cheered me on. So I leave this tiny town and then I'm on national TV doing Miss America and I'm Miss Kentucky, followed by in succession, one season of The Amazing Race with my dad, which is on CBS Sunday nights. Everybody sees it. My community, every community of anyone I've ever known in my life. And then as soon as we lost The Amazing Race the first time, we were immediately cast for an all-star season because we were fan favorites. So before that season even aired, this is all in 2010, I'm filming another season of a national television show that will be aired to all the people who have loved and supported me in my life.
How did you do the third season? How did that happen? So you did the two, but then...
A few years later, they did another all-star season. And my dad, I can't remember exactly how it happened like this, but my dad, not recently, but when he turned 60, got really into climbing mountains, like big climbing mountains. He did the Seven Summits. He just completed that. Only like less than 500 people in the history of the world have ever summited the highest peak on...
Wow. Your mom must be very patient.
Oh, she hates it.
Okay.
It's terrible.
Okay.
Like, I wish he would stop. So he was doing something and they paired me with another partner and that season didn't do well. That was, I was struggling in my life during that season also. So that was when the high had started kind of going low. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's what we all strived for, to achieve our goals and to manifest these things in our lives and celebrate our wins. But when we become defined by wins only or public accolades only, or especially when we start to define ourselves and happiness by those things only, that's when life can start to unravel and unravel very quickly.
The thing is about your story, though, most people don't have that many successes. That was an unusual amount of successes for a very long period of time. So, yes, that's what people and humans probably do gravitate toward. But no one, not too many people have felt what you felt, the high of it all for so long being on top. As much as I am beyond in awe and impressed about all that you've done, I would have to say that the part about your book that made the biggest impact on me was your low period. Because the vulnerability and the honesty that you shared that story with is, I respect it so much because you didn't sugarcoat it. And that must have been, well, it was just vulnerable. And most people can't be that vulnerable. But that is the impact I think that your book has. Because we all go through life's challenges, trials, and tribulations. And when we're in a marketing world, like we both are, where you're presenting yourself as a brand or a product, it is hard to tell the backstory if the backstory isn't maybe matching your brand. But it does match yours because yours is an honest brand. And so kudos to you for that, because it gave me so much, you know, the resurrection story, you know, you're down and out, you know, life's challenges. It's a movie, you know, it's definitely a story of the comeback kid, you know, and you sure came back with this empire that you have. And that's amazing. And, you know, I think it's the credit to basically living out your life, you know, that you're a believer and you're close to God and he's helping you every step of the way, but your story is going to help more people for what you went through on the downside than most likely even on the upside.
You're exactly right. I didn't struggle with telling the story. I knew that I had to tell the story. I was starting to get messages from people saying things like, you know, I wish I could have a life like yours, or, you know, I wish that I could wake up the way that you seem to wake up, or like find this joy. I just feel this and this and this in my life. And I started saying to myself, I am not telling them how I got to this place. And that is not influencing anyone in any way that I want to influence people. I had to tell them the whole story. And I was existing in successfully in an online space for years before I told my story. Very big also about, I try not to teach while I'm learning things. And I wanted to make sure, you know, I was I'm almost 9 years in sobriety now. And like, that's a big part of my story. But like 1 year after that, I wasn't ready to tell a story. I hadn't lived it yet. I don't want to waste people's time writing a book that it's written on shaky ground. So I wanted to make sure that the way that I was living was set in stone. It was something that I had put to the test and through the fire. And I knew that it was time. It was time to share that part of my story. And you put things out into the world and you don't know how they're going to be received. And that was one of my pain points always. I wanted everyone to like me. Everyone had always shown so much love and respect to me growing up. And I really was attached to that. And I knew that in writing this story, people would view me in a different way. I knew it would help a lot of people. But I also knew like this was going to rough the story up a little bit. But, you know, they call people in this space influencers. And a lot of people might call some of what I do in that realm. I don't think I would call myself that in its entirety. But I mean, if I want to be any kind of influence on people's lives, I had to share that part of the story. And I could have not, because no one knew. Even there were family members that didn't know. And it's also different, you know, think of telling your deepest, darkest secret to like confiding in a friend, something you have to get off your chest, or something no one knows about you, or something you're sharing with your therapist. It's a whole different ball game when you are putting a work of nonfiction out into the world.
Yes.
Because A, once you put it out there, you can't take it back. And B, it's going out there. They can make of it what they want to make of it. But my piece in this was sharing it. So I'm very thankful for that.
It's beautiful. I mean, your whole story is so beautiful, that also. And there is a line in your book, a quote that I'll read here. You see, I discovered that we can't find a full life in those hero moments, just as we can't find it in the zero moments. I thought that that was beautiful. And my question, those in-between moments that aren't summiting and they aren't in the depths of despair, how do you do it? That's the part.
You know, you made a comment while ago that a lot of people may not have experienced the early success that I did, and they may not have the accolades as this thing that's attached to them that they need to get this monkey off their back. I really wrote to the person who is me, maybe who has that red flag like flashing in their face. There's an addiction, or there's an affair, or there's like some overhaul that needs to happen in their life. Maybe it's life or death. Maybe it's just like living this life of misery and despair, and it's just awful. But there's this whole other person who really is this in this in-between and lives a lot of this in-between. Their hero moment may not be as high as my hero moment. Their zero moment might not be as low. But this in-between that we all experience in life is all the same. So I think they always say, like, you go into a drug and alcohol facility, you know, you're at your rock bottom. Rock bottom is like the absolute low, that you can't go any lower. There's only up, like the lowest you can go. And I think, and I wrote a whole chapter in my book called Fine is the New Rock Bottom. I think that the people who are living in between and who think that like the absence of bad is a qualifier for a good life, nothing's going wrong in my life. That person who thinks, you know, this isn't really how I thought my life would feel or be, but here we are, and I guess this is it. That person that just is okay with okay. that to me is rock bottom. Also, a big red flag. Mm-hmm. Life is meant to be vibrant and bright. And to get to the vibrant and bright, you definitely have to go through the lows. But that mediocre in between, like, okay with just okay, I write a lot to that person in Living Fully because I'm really passionate about not living your life like that. You talk about that person and you ask about that. And there's so many ways that I write about in the book that that person can find their way to living fully into a more vibrant life.
Right.
The person with the red flag glaring and the high and the low below. It's really to that person in the middle too.
Well, and in your book, you talk a lot about it's the wake up call and you are, you know, that's what you're championing that. And that basically what you just said a minute ago is just don't live in mediocrity, but also like a lukewarm life, right? You're not supposed to live a lukewarm life. That's not what we're here for. It's like you said. So I think that is absolutely an amazing takeaway. And there is, this book has more nuggets in it. And like you said, for everyone, but I love the wake up call because I feel like in my own life for the last 6 months to a year that I also know that I have to wake up, you know, even though I'm doing my thing, I still like, sometimes you can get so locked into what you're doing that you're not thinking anymore about, am I supposed to be doing it? Am I supposed to be doing something different? Stop like just like sleepwalking. And sometimes I have said that about myself in the last year that I literally feel like I'm sleepwalking because life is so busy and I'm making all the deadlines, but I'm not quite awake because it's hard. Right? So
awake, but like you're not alive. You feel like you're awake and it's just like, your life can just, your days can pass before you like that without even noticing. Like, I understand because I've been that person. And I also think I wrote about this because that noise of busyness is such a distractor from our passions and our thoughts, our opinions, our wake up call, even that noise, constant noise of like busyness and schedules. And having to do this, this, and this. There is so much to be said about that. And our entire world, everyone that you know is busy. The stay-at-home mom is busy. The you is busy. The mailman is busy. Everyone's busy. Do you talk to anybody that's like, you know?
No, I feel the same way. Everybody.
And I always honor that. I don't ever try to think that I'm busier than somebody else. But I also like, my word of the year this year is simplify. I don't want to live my life like that. I don't want to live my life checking these things off the list, doing these accomplishments, blah, 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 making it to all these things. I want to like live it. I want a rich life that is full of so many in between mundane things that are vibrant and bright. And there's only room for that if you weed out all of that mess of busyness. Half the things we're doing, we don't have to do. We'd still make enough money. We'd still... our kids would be just fine. Our spouses would be just fine. We fill our days, I think, for a reason beyond that we need to do these things. And I explore that in the book because I explored it in my own life. Why am I saying yes to all these things? Well,
that is hard to do because if you don't want to let somebody down, it is harder to say no.
Yes. When people think you're important and they want you at their party or their event or they want you on their podcast, it's hard to say no to because I honor that.
I know.
I put myself in this position and I love doing those things, but I also love living and I love being with my family and I love not having a schedule that's packed 14 hours a day, which sometimes it is.
Yes.
I try not to do that anymore. And to do that, I have to say no to a lot of things.
Yes. Good for you. Good for you. Let's talk about your three young children with your little girl that was just born 6 months ago and her beautiful name Sunday. And I wanted to ask you if her beautiful name, which is so sweet, has a special meaning to you.
Yes. You know, it's an interesting name. I either get met with, was she born on a Sunday? I wouldn't know the meaning behind it because no one knows anyone named Sunday. I heard the name Sunday about 5 years ago. There's only like one Sunday that I had ever heard of. And I actually didn't meet the little girl. I had just heard it, in passing. And at first it like took me by I was like, her name's Sutton Bay. And then I fell in love with this name. And, we had this name as our girl name when we had my first son, Ford. Didn't get to use it. We had this name as our girl name when we had our second son, Shepherd. And we never found out what our children are. And we had a girl name and a boy name. And then, you know, they pull a girl out on the 24th. And we just knew that that was our name. A, because it was a name that we liked, but B, it had taken on this meaning. So between Shepherd and Sunday, I had 4 miscarriages. So it was my 7th pregnancy.
Oh, sorry. So sorry.
It's okay. It led me to her. So I write about that in my new book, I experienced with that. And then as I was giving birth, literally, my dad summited the 7th of his 7 summits. So this whole journey had culminated literally as I'm having this baby. Like this week, he is reaching the summit. Then, Lisa, the craziest thing happened. So I knew it was Sunday just because I'd love the name. And then like my 7th pregnancy, he summits the 7 summits, like Sunday, wow, the 7th day. I just knew it.
Wow.
And then it's the day after I'd had her, and we posted her name on Instagram. And Kyle is Italian, my husband. And he is, you know, from this long line of like Italians in his family. His grandpa came over from Italy and his name was Dominic. And his dad's name's Dominic. And I didn't like love the name Dominic, so I wasn't going to use that. But I thought, how cool, because apparently his grandpa, I never got to meet him, was this incredible, just rich soul that lived this big life. And he was a shoe cobbler for Johnson & Murphy, made shoes for the president, and just sang opera all the time, was always cooking with oregano and garlic, just this rich, vibrant human being. And someone commented when I said her name was Sunday. Gosh, this makes me cry. Someone commented, my name is Sunday in Italian, but the Italian word for Sunday is Dominica.
No way.
Was such a
confirmation.
We Googled it. We were like, there's absolutely no way that, like, you know, people comment things and they're sometimes improved, sometimes they're not. And it was just such a peaceful moment where we just realized that this man that I'd never met was like a part of her name. And
wow.
That was just meant to be. And
wow.
My middle name is Blaze. My sister lost a baby. He lived, he was a month old when he passed away, and he had a heart defect. And that was her first child. She has another child now, but his name was Blaze. And they always thought that it would be too painful to use the name again. And I wanted to carry it on in our family. So her middle name is Blaze.
Wow. She has a lot to live up to. Big shoes to fill. Which I'm sure she will with a mama like you. Wow. How exciting.
You know, I think that the same-sex parent is such a, it's really like your ultimate icon. So much modeled after a mother when you're a daughter. I feel like having a girl really made me like, it'd be like, I got to straighten up every part of my life because somebody's really watching.
Oh my gosh, so sweet. So we met you in April last year when you were pregnant. And yes, signing the book at Willow here in 30 Avenue. And it was so sweet. And I love these pictures from that day. I don't know if you ever saw it in the magazine. That was a great afternoon. And it's so fun that from that day that we're talking now and that you're going to be our cover girl, which we're really excited about.
You know what's a funny full circle thing too? Well, first off, like, every magazine cover that I get is like the biggest deal in my entire life. I am so excited to do this. It's such an honor, especially to be on this particular issue. And it's so funny that I met you too at Willow, and like this journey of mine in this space, becoming this lifestyle entrepreneur. The way that I got started was really in like beauty and fashion. And, you know, you start and it's not like you have these outrageous budgets to begin these things. So you rely a lot on boutiques like taking a chance on you and, you know, letting you visit their stores and maybe shoot in their clothes or whatever. And Willow was probably the first store to let me do that. I had just kind of got my footing. My YouTube channel was doing really well. And we were in Florida. And I did like one of my, I was wearing Willow clothes. You know, this was gosh, 7 years ago, probably. Yeah. And here we are, like, doing an event at Willow, and I meet you there and doing this magazine cover and for a magazine and a place that's really special to me that I've gone back and forth to for years and years, 15 years. And it's really a full circle, really cool.
That's awesome.
Moments.
Well, Willow does have the best clothes, and that is an uptown boutique. So even 7 years ago, I mean, they were on the cutting edge just as they are right now. So that was a good marriage for you and for them as well. So we're so excited. So we'll be seeing you soon, and we'll talk about that more. Talk a little bit about, as we're getting ready to close out, your new book that I believe debuts in February, All In. What is that?
So Living Fully was really my big, heavy, this is my story. These are the principles I live by that I feel if you implement these in your life, you will live a full life. And this book took me like over 2 years to write. It was just, oh my gosh, writing a book like that and sharing your story in that kind of way, it takes a long time to do it right. If you're doing it, you know. If you're doing it right. Mm-hmm. And All In is like a companion book to go with that. So, you know, there's some pieces that we pulled from Living Fully and there's some new stuff, but it's really it's a much easier book. It flows, you know, well. There's parts where you can write in the book and draw in the book. It's really one of those books that, you know, you buy at the beginning of the year to kind of do your vision board or to cast your visions or to write lists of your priorities or to reflect on principles that I wrote about in Living Fully that are really life changing. It's really like a boots on the ground version of Living Fully, but it's a fun, light, easy book. I'm a big believer in, like vision boards. I'm a big believer in God and I'm very religious also, but I think that manifesting things into your life with like a visual representation is the most powerful thing that one of the most powerful things I've ever done. So I talk a lot about vision boarding throughout this book and kind of how I put my vision board together, how I choose the things from my board, how I remove things that from my board, how I take things off my board. Because I think that they're really, really powerful. And a lot of people will sit down and on January 1st, they'll get a piece of poster board out and they'll go through three magazines and whatever pictures come to them, they cut them out, put them on there. And I used to do that. But then I realized everything on this board is coming true and I really need to be intentional about this. Even little things I write about in the book. I really wanted space in my life last year. I didn't want it to be cluttered and busy and crowded. And my vision board was cluttered and busy and crowded. Every single thing overlapped. There was not one inch of white space. And I have a friend of mine, her name is Dr. Tara Swart, and she's a neuroscientist and she's very brilliant. She was a psychiatrist for years and years. And then, she's very interested in like the field of like just studying the brain and the brain's ability to change and the things that influence the brain to change and all this stuff. And she and I are friends. And I showed her a picture of my vision board and she said, you need some space in there if you want to bring space into your life. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't take anything off because I want all these things. And she said, okay, go get another piece of poster board and add to your vision board and spread the things out. So I did that.
Last
year had space. I was not willing to part with a single one of those things, just like in our lives sometimes when we want to do these things. And it's powerful. Visual representations, the things that you tell yourself, the things that you look at are really, really wildly powerful.
They are.
I've become a master, I feel like, at the vision board. And I write a lot about that in All In. And I help you create your vision board.
Because I'm in a similar business where we are vision boarding things, parties that we're doing, events next year and all that. But as I'm listening to you talk, and I'm agreeing with you because it's important, but I just thought, part of the reason why it is because it's a faith walk. When you put it on something, on a vision board, it actually is faith. And I think that is probably what you're moving. You know, I mean, yes, it is what you're saying, but really the momentum behind it is probably because when you can see it, you can believe it. You can start believing it and you're walking it out too. So that's pretty awesome.
Great. It's like a prayer and fast forward, I feel like.
Yes. Yes.
Asking you shall receive. It's a, you know, seek and you will find. Mm-hmm. Am I saying I am creating every single one of these things that I'm putting on the board? No, I'm saying I'm co-creating.
Yes, yes.
God that I believe in.
Right.
And I write about that in Living Fully. And it's funny because when I had that part in my book, I had the part on manifesting and the part on faith in the same chapter. That's how closely
yes.
those two concepts are interwoven. And some of the people on my team at Random House were kind of like, ooh, I don't know how people are going to take that because those two things are really big for people. And people sometimes don't want yeah. those things interwoven. Right. And I said, that's my experience with it. I have a lot of faith in my manifesting chapter and I have a lot of manifesting in my faith chapter. And those chapters are back to back in my book and for a yeah. reason.
Oh my gosh, that's so amazing. Well, I know you're busy. And I cannot thank you enough for your time because I know time is precious. And this was just a delightful way to spend a Tuesday morning with you. And we so look forward to seeing you in probably less than 2 weeks and for your cover. And I'm very thankful and grateful that we got to meet last year that led to this and that we'll keep going. And more power to you and everything that you're doing. I think you're amazing. Thank you so very much, Mallory. Thank you for watching and listening, everybody. Mallory was just a gift and an inspiration beyond belief. I hope you have a good day today. Thank you for watching. Bye-bye.